Whether you're just wrapping up the night shift or on your way to start the day, we got what you need.
Welcome to the morning shift.
It's the most mid team in history.
A whole new way to start your day with nationally televised reporter Tiffany Blackman.
Any pizza for me can be a personal.
Can't wait.
Former Falcons and Alabama offensive lineman Mike Johnson.
I've had my butt chewed by Nick Saban a few times.
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
And Atlanta sports radio guru Bo Morgan.
Do you know who I am? I'm Squid Bill.
You tell him I'm coming. And hell's coming with me, you hear?
It's a new experience.
And a new take on a sports morning show.
The Morning Shift is brought to you by Greater Atlanta Erie McDonald's. Download the app for great deals.
The Morning Shift is on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Now, here's Tiffany, Mike, and Bo.
It's actually Tribble, Mike, and Bo. Welcome to The Morning Shift, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. So, gentlemen, I was at the urinal this morning, and T.J. Watt hit me. He's just everywhere.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
I tried to chip him for you, but...
I was going
to
say, did the stall get a chip from Kyle Pitts?
A feeble chip. Man, he was playing with his hair on fire yesterday. Not what we expected or wanted coming out the gate. The final score yesterday, Chris Boswell, 18. Falcons 10.
Yeah, I was going to say, he had to have gotten the game ball, right? He also punted one time, too.
He did.
Look, man, we did the post game yesterday. How was the flyover? Because I know that... Like, you take callers, you're around the fans, you get more of the post-game vibe than I think we do being in the studio. I'm curious what the flyover was like.
First of all, massive thanks to the lovely Evita McDaniel. She does marketing over there at the Signia Hilton. She smells really good, too, and just very, very accommodating.
You smelled her?
Well, you couldn't help it. She
had an aura.
She had an aura. Yeah, it wasn't, I didn't smell her neck or anything inappropriately. But Neston 4, what a beautiful sports
bar. I told you that was pretty cool, wasn't it?
Man, I had the... tater tots covering the shredded Wagyu beef. Then I had a nice burger as well. And it was all Steeler fans in there yesterday.
Can't imagine
why. 90%. What was the stadium like? What percentage?
You tell me, Mike. I thought 65-35. I thought the Falcons fans outnumbered it, but I thought there was a good representation of Steelers.
A vocal minority.
To be honest with you, I wouldn't have given them 35%. I thought it was more 75-25. And shout out to the Falcons fans, because not only were they there in good numbers, I thought their hair was on fire. Before the game, I thought they were making their presence known. Steelers definitely had a presence. I'm not gonna lie about that.
Yep.
But when you saw something happen, you saw a lot more white Falcons flags than you did yellow terrible towels. I'll just say that. So I thought that was a good sign, and I kind of tweeted it out. I was like, man, it's the there's a presence, but these Falcons fans are out for blood in this building right now. So it was good to see.
And Arthur Smith was on the field yesterday, not up in the booth. What kind of any palpable response to him when he sauntered out onto the field?
Not that I noticed, but I don't know that he didn't just. I don't know that any of the fans would have just noticed him. He wasn't put on the halo board or anything like that. I mean, some people close to the tunnel might have looked, but I didn't notice anything over the top for sure.
But after the game, as I predicted, though, he took off his shirt and was swinging it over his head and did a lap around the field, saying, "This is my house." Right?
Kind of disappointed. I thought we maybe should have done something like the Hawks always do, and maybe put something in a timeout of Arthur Smith, "Welcome home, Arthur. Thanks for all the, thanks for the 21 wins." But I thought Arthur actually did a decent job. For what they did, their offense didn't do a lot, but he didn't really overcomplicate it. Basically the game plan to me for Pittsburgh was play to our strengths, which is defense, keep the ball on the ground for the most part, and let Chris Boswell hit 5-6 field goals.
And that 57 yarder would have been good from 77. It looked like that was just. He boomed it.
They made it in the red zone, if I'm not mistaken, one time. And that was that last drive where the Falcons got the stop. Other than that, they weren't in the red zone at all. I mean, his field goals were 57, 51, 44, 56, 40. And then the 25-yarder late. I mean, holy smokes. Like, that was unbelievable from Chris Boswell. And I told Arch, as soon as the game was over, we're walking down the locker room to do our post-game interviews, and I said, well, I didn't have on the bingo card that you would lose the opener without giving up a touchdown.
Yeah.
That one I didn't have.
I think the beauty of that, too, is that, like, a lot was made of Justin Fields. A lot was made of Arthur Smith. A lot was made of Russell Wilson not playing, everything else. And, yes, they won, and that's the gut punch. But it wasn't like a celebratory offensive just juggernaut. You didn't run the Fields package and score four touchdowns and do all the other things. So it wasn't like they went out of the stadium with a fist raised high. It was like
they're like, well, we escaped with one there.
Yeah, I mean we got a little bit lucky. Our game plan worked a little bit better than theirs did offensively, and that's why we come out of here with a victory. So and that was not hard to do, let's be honest.
I'll tell you one thing about Justin Fields, what always makes me kind of fear him a little bit. He can look so awful. A botched snap, a terrible read, just very inaccurate throw. You look like he's just totally out of sorts and lost, and then he'll tuck it and run for 50 yards, or he'll hit a big pass to like a George Pickens or something. That's what he does.
Should have known it wasn't our day on the opening snap for Pittsburgh offensively. He botches the snap.
And we didn't get the fumble.
And No, it wasn't even that. It said they falled forward for 3 yards and gained. They gained 3 yards on a botched snap.
Like,
I think he botched about three of them at some point in the game, because there was another one where he was able to regain it, just kind of throw it back to Najee Harris, and he got a good game. Man, it was a physical game yesterday. I mean, look, we'll get to the deficiencies that the offense had on the next segment, or maybe here in a second. But we got to take our hat off. And I'm wearing my Cancun Mexican Grill hat. Take my hat off to the defense, because Grady Jarrett, David Onyemata, Eddie Goldman, Matthew Judon, dude, Justin Simmons was flying around. Those guys played phenomenal yesterday. The linebackers and I thought Troy Anderson looked pretty good coming back. So did Nate Landman played well. Caden Ellis, the defense was absolutely phenomenal. George Pickens caught a few. Probably to me, the best throw of the day for Justin Fields was, I think it was the late in the second half. He makes the throw to Pickens where he basically threw Pickens into the ball because AJ had good coverage on the outside, and Justin Fields did a good job of putting it on the inside part there, Mike, and he basically just threw Pickens into the ball.
Yeah, there was a couple nice plays that Justin Fields did make yesterday, and let's be honest, it was a very Justin Fields-esque game. There were some throws that I'm sure he'd like to have back, but very few negative plays. And that's the beauty of what Justin Fields is.
Took care of the ball.
He took care of the ball for the most part. Even when things broke down, he's able to – I mean, you saw it on the second play of the game. He rolls out, steps out from behind – his offensive line, he can't get anything and gains like 8 yards with his legs. And that's the beauty of Justin Fields. Now, you're going to have throws. There was one along the sideline to Pickens. There's one behind Najee Harris where we talked about it earlier. Najee kind of looks back and stares him down. So there's going to be those plays, but more times than not, he's going to get you out of trouble. And that's all he had to do yesterday, right? I mean, you look at it and you're like, oh, Justin Fields. That's all he had to do was just keep him out of trouble, keep him out of negative stuff, because the Falcons' offense couldn't do anything.
I guess credit to him. He didn't lose his mind and try to do too much. He goes, wow, our defense is really balling, so I can just relax and just execute the game plan.
Well, and, they didn't put too much on him either, though. They didn't put him. I mean, there were situations where Mike just kind of alluded to it. What was it, Mike? It was the second – it was the second field goal they got. They get inside like the 30, and then they do this little trick play with Pickens. They lose 10 yards. It's two straight run plays after that, and they let Boswell kick. I think that was the 51-yarder because they knew they had that. In hindsight, if Kirk Cousins would have made some better decisions with the ball, we might be talking about a different result, because I felt he pressed and made some bad decisions, which cost you. And I know we'll get into that on the other side.
Yeah, it's the post-mortems, Falcons Monday. It's also a man-up Monday. How do we do with our picks? That's coming up at 6:40. But 18-10 the final. Falcons 0-1 as they head up to Philadelphia for a Monday night game next week. It's a morning shift. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.
A complete recap of our Falcons game is on Falcons Monday.
You know what I mean?
Falcons Monday is presented by Ticketmaster, the official ticket marketplace of the Atlanta Falcons. Our Falcons play here.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured Hire. Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Welcome back on this Man Up Monday. Triple in for Tiffany with a Squid and Bo. We got Day Squared and Dylon. And gentlemen, I guess something felt normal and oddly comfortable yesterday. The Falcons, even under a new regime, they lose another very winnable game. It just drives me crazy after a while. How many have just slipped through the fingertips over the past several years?
I want to kind of highlight your term normal right there, because I think that there was something, and you felt it as the game went on. It was like, and I said this yesterday in postgame, Rob, T.J. Watt came out and didn't really know what the Falcons' game plan was in the first series. And you can tell. I mean, Caleb McGarry, I think like five of the six dropbacks on the first series, he's left on an island and does a good job. It's like T.J. Watt's a little more hesitant. And as the game goes on, T.J. Watt is like, prove to me that you're not going to bootleg. Prove to me that you're not going to run a draw. Prove to me that there's not going to be a play-action pass. And none of those things ever happened. There were no draws. There were no bootlegs. There were zero play-action passes for a quarterback that has had a ton of successful history on play-action passes. And so when you talk about normal, I guess, is a good word for it, because there were a zero, and I mean zero, wrinkles in this game plan for the Falcons yesterday.
I want to ask you guys what you think about this. I think that first drive, Bijan gets that little shuttle pass. You think he's going to score. Peyton Wilson makes a brilliant tackle on him, keeps the Falcons out of the end zone. Does that change the complexion of the whole afternoon if you score on that first drive, but Peyton Wilson makes that big tackle?
Yeah, absolutely. It changes the complexion.
That was a great tackle. Open field, one-on-one against somebody as gifted as Bijan. He's a rookie out of NC State.
Well, he made a couple of good plays, and I think that kid is another player that they'll have that you'll say, oh, another great defensive player that Pittsburgh has in their front seven. The reality of the situation is it's a 7-0 ball game. When that's a victory for them, because they knew they were limited offensively. Look, and I was just tweeting with Mr. Yoes, always a big listener. He's like, oh, Justin Fields did. He led 6 scoring drives. Well, reality is you turned the ball over 3 times. You gave them 6 points off 2 turnovers, basically. But one field goal was inside 40 yards. Offensively, they did nothing. If you scored 7 points there, you know, it changes it, because now it's a 7-3 game after that. You might have put some pressure on their offense to do more than just get on the other side of the 50 and kick field goals all day. You didn't do anything offensively that put real pressure on them at any point in the game.
Let me bring y'all in on a conversation, too, happening on the socials, and I mentioned this to Bo this morning. Field Yates tweeted, interesting note from ESPN Stats and Info, and it's definitely something I noticed along the way as well. Falcons were in pistol or shotgun on 96% of the snaps. Of the 22 snaps out of shotgun, 0 design runs. Of the 26 snaps out of pistol, 81% run. There was no question, and that's kind of what I mean about T.J. Watt. And we're going to talk a lot about Caleb McGarry and Kyle Pitts, kind of broke down the numbers on that and how often Caleb McGarry was getting help. There was nothing to keep anybody off balance defensively. And I think it's interesting to look at the follow-up
tweets.
They
were that predictable formation. That's crazy.
You look at Damian Woody responding, he goes, Kirk Cousins isn't healthy from that Achilles. And Field Yates says that's the only explanation that makes sense, right? And that's kind of where I'm at, right? I think that there is a lot of blame to go around. I think Kirk Cousins played awfully. I think Caleb McGarry was overmatched. And I think that Zach Robinson, for whatever reason, I don't know. I want to believe that there is a deeper reason. But for whatever reason, was the most vanilla game plan I think I've ever seen in the NFL. I mean, just straight up. And I'm not saying that to overreact. It was the most vanilla game plan I've ever seen. It was one, maybe two run plays. The offensive line blocked wide zone every single play. Now, sometimes you inserted Charlie Warner. Sometimes there was a slice back. One time you had a pin and pull and Jake Matthews gets in the flat. Other than that, you saw one run play and you saw a drop back pass.
And let's be honest, it's not like Kirk Cousins is the second coming of Michael Vick out there. He's not a guy that wants to move anyways. He wants to stand there and wait for things to come open. That's part of the and I hate to even use this phrase after, 3 turnover game, but elite processor, right? That's kind of what it is. Even on the touchdown play to Pitts, he moves out of the pocket, makes an accurate throw on the go. Why didn't you do more of that, though? Why, to Mike's point, you never kept T.J. Watt honest at any point. You never kept anybody up. Dude, you can talk about it. And it wasn't just T.J. Watt. Alex Highsmith didn't have a terrible game either. He was putting pressure, and Jake Matthews, for the most part, did a good job. You got the one holding call on Jake. But to me, that's kind of one where I don't know what he's supposed to do, because Highsmith got underneath his pads where Jake's hands are to block him. I mean, that's his face mask. Cam Hayward, I don't know if he was blocked at all yesterday. So, and Joey Porter did a good job of neutralizing, for the most part, Drake London. Two catches. I heard people complain, well, we didn't use, Bijan Robinson wasn't good enough yesterday. Well, the guy had over 100 and something yards yesterday, all purpose. The interception, I don't know why Kirk threw it, because he tries to step up.
Which interception?
The final interception. He steps up, and that's one where...
Don't you just take the sack there? Plastic. You
have to. You have to eat the ball. He forced plays. I thought it was a perfect combination of what they were able to get after you with without you making enough adjustments, and then the quarterback on the top of that forcing plays.
Yeah. I think that Nate Tice, too, our buddy Nate Tice, Mike's son, who works for Pro Football Focus and Yahoo and a couple of other places, he did a good job kind of breaking this down, and he was like, this looked like a Peyton Manning the year he comes back from the neck injury game plan. You know what I mean? Like you're not going to do much with him other than shotgun, and he's going to be the kind of guy that could diagnose pre-snap and get the ball out. And
do
that's
you think
just
he's healthy?
From everything I've seen from him, yes. I mean, there's been nothing, Rob, that we've seen from Kirk Cousins.
You saw him in practice running
around
a little bit,
and he looked
out
fine. The problem is that the game plan, there's only one of two answers here, and that's that Zach Robinson either made this game plan based on Kirk Cousins not being healthy, or, and the much worse scenario is, Zach Robinson's not very good at his job. And I have to believe the first one, right? I mean, I have to believe the first one. I can't think that Zach Robinson would come out and be that freaking predictable about every single thing we were trying to do.
Would there be any truth that, I'm just asking you, you've been in those rooms, that was a game plan where they wanted to protect and ease him in, and they didn't want him to do too much early, especially with guys like T.J. Watt and Alex Highsmith on the edges?
Well, you can talk yourself in circles on that.
Exactly.
Because I would say you'd like to protect him from T.J. Watt and Alex Highsmith and do everything you can. I mean, just go look at what – just take Justin Fields' legs out of it, right? Go look at what they did in the backfield to Matthew Judon. Matthew Judon wasn't in the backfield at all last night. And Matthew Judon, at times, was being blocked by a tight end. And it wasn't because the tight end was blocking him sleep. It was simply because the tight end – it was because Matthew Judon didn't know where the ball was going, right? It's like, I don't know, if you're running wide zone this way, bootleg, screen, quick pass, tunnel, it's like he's coming off trying to diagnose. T.J. Watt, you watch as the game goes on, and he is essentially in the second half going, prove to me that you're going to do something else. Because until – It started to be cute when you line up Kyle Pitts outside of him, and he's looking at Kyle Pitts going, don't touch me. You know what I mean? Like, I dare you to touch me. Because T.J. Watt down the stretch goes, that's real cute, man. Y'all want to chip with Kyle Pitts. I ain't worried about Kyle Pitts, and I'm still going to destroy Caleb McGarry in the second half.
Oh, boy. So this looks like just an overall disaster of game planning and coaching.
Well,
just on one side. Hold on. Just on one side of the ball.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to, and I know you're not saying that, but I'm not going to sit here and listen.
I'm just saying offensively.
I understand that, but I don't want anyone to act like they didn't dominate on the defensive side of the ball. That was as good of a defensive, showing as you're going to get. They had multiple sacks. Grady Jarrett looked phenomenal.
He gets a sack, and he was just fighting like a dog. He looked good. He looked like he felt good.
At one point, I'm not sure how they couldn't. You don't throw it. There's not a holding call thrown on what they were doing. At one time, Grady Jarrett's jersey was hanging off of him, ripped from his right underneath his arm. Because of the grabbing and the pulling and the tugging that
was
going on.
That's the one replay I saw where he almost fought through that double.
Yeah.
He kind of did, but he got to Justin Fields just like a tick too late.
I think, too, and if you're going to subscribe, prescribe to the notion that you know, this is a Kirk Cousins health thing, then I think the good news is that, Rob, there is a lot that can still be done.
Yeah.
Right? Kirk Cousins can get healthy. If you have to go with the latter and say that, you know, this is a straight up Zach Robinson thing and that he was not doing this because of Kirk Cousins' health, I think that's much more terrifying. That's much more terrifying down the road.
Is it overplayed and lazy analysis to overemphasize the fact we didn't even see him or the first or second stringers in the preseason?
I think it's hindsight. I mean, I think it is what it is. I think 10 of the 32 starting quarterbacks in the NFL did not play in the preseason. A lot of them looked fine, right? Lamar Jackson looked fine. He missed a couple days of training camp because he was sick.
But he's not with a new team coming off an injury.
I agree. And like I said, I mean, there's a lot. I think a little bit of it's hindsight. But I don't think there is a perfect recipe, right? I don't think that this is like, well, this is how I do it. When you look at today's NFL and you look at the situation around the Atlanta Falcons, health will be a key concern throughout the year for the quarterback. So not trotting him out in the preseason. You could go either way. Now, had he come out and thrown for 4 touchdowns, you'd say, they didn't need that, you know, but that's not the case, and that's not what we're looking at.
Yeah, I'm just tired of talking about preseason and when they play and when they don't play. No one's going to ever be happy either way.
Right.
If he went out there and played and he took a shot to the face and he missed 2 weeks of practice because of concussion, he'd have someone complaining why was he out there. Preseason's become the ultimate Monday morning quarterback debate.
All right, we're going to come back and we're going to man up, be held accountable in front of our peers and the listening audience. Coming up on the Morning Shift, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Time to take a look back.
This is Falcons Monday.
Everybody got to lock in right now.
Falcons Monday is presented by Ticketmaster, the official ticket marketplace of the Atlanta Falcons.
Our Falcons play here.
Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured? Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm.
Hey,
welcome back to the Morning Shift.
I got a bone to pick with you.
Oh, boy.
You told me at 3:30 on Saturday there would be no punches landed in the Cy-Hawk Trophy game.
I know, right?
And there were quite a few. I thought that Iowa had landed a knockout punch in the first half.
Right.
And holy smokes.
I don't know what it is. I watch that game every year for some reason. I got a really good buddy named Chuck, who I hang out with over there in the hood, and he went to Iowa State, and he remembers David Archer very well, this, that, and the other. So he's made it a little interesting, more interesting than it normally is, and good for Iowa State.
It's a very physical game.
It always is.
It's so much. I think that's part of the allure for you and I, especially. Is
such an old-school game, and, you know, Kirk Ferentz knows nothing about offense, clearly. He's demonstrated that over the past several years.
Well, Iowa State, the fact that they were able to come back, I thought the throw in the final drive, I'm not a huge fan of. It's Anthony Beck's son, the former tight end in NFL. Rocco Beck is the quarterback for Iowa State. I'm not a huge fan of him as a I don't dislike the kid, but there's times where I feel like he's very inaccurate. The ball, he made a rope of a throw on that final drive that set up that game-winning field goal. And I'm a Matt Campbell fan, so that was a good game. How about Notre Dame?
I was about to say, Northern Illinois' coach after that game, and I almost started crying. That was just such an emotional win for that program.
Wes had a stat for me, Rob, and I think this was, we're talking off the air, I think that's only like the 9th or 10th win for that coach at Northern Illinois, but 4 of them have come against Power 4 schools.
He used to be the Ravens running backs coach, I think.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I know. That's crazy.
It's unbelievable.
That's a crazy stat. But a good friend, that was, I enjoyed watching that. That was pretty funny to see that, actually.
Yeah. I was in town in Tuscaloosa Saturday night, and people are going to look at the final of that game and not understand how ridiculous that was.
South Florida gave you all everything you could handle.
Let me tell you something. If Falcons fans want to feel bad about Caleb McGarry against TJ Watt, you should have watched Bama and Wilkin Formby, their right tackle, play South Florida's defensive line, because you want to talk about. I'm not kidding you right now. I think he had. It was maybe 6 holding calls,
wow.
But it was like 150 yards of holding calls. It was like a 70-yard middle road touchdown, holding on the right tackle. A 40-yard pass, holding on the right tackle. And I was like, I was sitting next to my buddy that used to play right tackle with me, and I used to play right tackle, Bama, you know, for a season. And I was looking at him going, dude, I have been there, and that guy wants to dig a hole and jump in it and have his buddies fill the dirt in on top of him. Like, he is ready to exit the stadium. It was Nick Saban field night commemorating the stadium. And, like, it was like 14-13 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And then they put a new right tackle in, Elijah Pritchett, who was injured during the week, and he's the backup. And they scored three straight touchdowns, and the game was over.
Who's Alabama got next week?
Wisconsin. Wisconsin
at noon. Wisconsin.
At Wisconsin.
There, yeah.
And then they have Georgia.
Georgia.
So they need to get their mind right.
Well,
they need to get their mind right.
The DJ Lagway era is on in Florida. I don't care if they did play Samford. 456 yards passing. look, there's something different. You can tell, and there's something different when guys throw the ball, and the touch this dude has on the deep ball, he just plays
it.
Was it
456?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Come on, Napier. Well, like, it's like the Simpsons episode where he's like, stop, he's dead already.
Yeah, but they only scored 38 points. I mean.
Oh, Christ.
Well, you got to remember, Samford had just
took the guy out. You know what? Don't even start me. Like, Nick Saban never ran up to score on anybody. Bull.
He was like one of the worst.
You know what?
He was one of the worst covers in American coaching history.
He needs to man up, Dylan.
Decisions made on Friday.
Guaranteed.
Aren't always the best decisions.
What did he say?
It's time for Mike and Bo to man up and own their picks. Good, bad, or ugly.
I was way wrong.
This is Man Up on the Morning Shift.
Man up.
Be a man.
You need some man up.
Give me a man up.
Man up.
Man up.
Man up.
Man up.
On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Yeah, mistakes were made.
You're going to man up, too.
I got to man up.
Yeah, I don't care what that thing said. You're going to man up, too.
But we're starting off with the good, right? Then going to the bad, or you want to go bad and good?
Let's just start off on a good note.
Well, Mike, what was good with you?
Well, the good news is that the game that ended up being the more lopsided of the week in the college football game of the week that we picked was Texas and Michigan. And that game ended up being robbed 31-12. And here's what I had to say about it. I absolutely love Texas minus the points. I know Michigan still has an elite defense. I saw this play out last year when Texas came in to Alabama and absolutely wiped the floor with guys like Xavier Worthy. Not the same receiver core, but I still think Sarkisian gets it done up in Michigan this weekend.
Woo!
I was pretty spot on, guys.
Pretty spot on.
Okay, now that the segment's over, that's how I'm done.
No accountability for you, huh? What did Coach Saban teach you about being accountable?
You got to blame yourself. Blame yourself.
I was so sure in myself with the Cleveland-Dallas game, picking Dallas, that I started Dallas's defense on our fantasy team, Mike. And guess what? Squibb was right again. Mm. Deshaun Watson is back and healthy, but he's no Joe Flacco running this Browns offense. I don't know how Dallas is an underdog. I don't care where they're playing. 2.5 points, I'm taking the Cowboys and the 2.5 points. They turn the dog pound around. They roll in there. I think they win by at least 5 to 7 points easily.
Hell yeah! Wow!
Easily!
Hey, what a night! Did I get one of those? Come on, man!
That's right. Oh,
you get the fanfare and the sound effects.
That's right.
Yeah, but you're about to be held accountable in a second, young
fella. You know who the star of the show is,
don't you? We all are. Hey, I had a virtuous moment, too. Texas 38.
Oh.
Michigan 21. You said elite defense. I don't think it's going to be elite on Saturday, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I guess that counts.
Tepid praise.
Yes!
I'll take it.
Yeah,
I'll take
that.
It. Didn't Texas score 38?
31.
31.
31 okay. To 12.
Yeah, you had
the ballpark.
You had the 2 and the 1 for Michigan score reverse.
You know, just
a little teaser either way. You know, a little touchdown teaser.
Now it gets real, gentlemen.
Yep.
Now we're going to have to look at the film after a disastrous performance yesterday. We're going to look at the film. We're going to hold everybody accountable. Mike, the bad.
Yeah, the bad for me, and I do want to mention, I had the Duke Northwestern under Friday night. It was 37. They went to overtime 13-13. So I had a bad beat Friday night, but the really ugly one for me, the Panthers and Saints game, I was like, you know what? I don't like either one of these offenses. The game ends 47-10. Here's what I had to say about 42 being the under. The Carolina Panthers against the New Orleans Saints under 42. Dude, I get it, man. Both these teams are healthy, but I'm going to have to see it to believe it. I think both of these are great defenses at this point. You look at Carolina's defense, Ajiro Evero is back, you know, in terms of their defense. Under 42 for me, I think Carolina New Orleans looks something like 17-14 this weekend. I'm sticking with that.
Oh, psych! That's the wrong number!
I can't believe you
that
thought
that was awful.
I can't believe you thought that Gaffler. Bryce Young would score 14 points. I know.
I mean, holy
smokes.
Dude, that Panthers defense is loaded. No, we're not loaded.
That was awful. All of you are going to learn that I have trust issues, and I think it starts with the teams that I trust in sports. I'm talking to you, Georgia Tech. And there's only one team I trust in college football right now, and it's Georgia Tech. I took Georgia Tech to cover as well. I took Tech -3 because there's just something about them with the momentum that they have. Them being only a 3-point favorite to me, this ain't the Syracuse team. It ain't the same coaching staff. It ain't the same team that did that against Clemson.
What did he say?
You lose. You get nothing.
My heart was trampled on this weekend. Everything I know and trust in football was just abused.
Well, guess what, Squid? I also went along with you, walking side by side with you on that fool's errand touting Georgia Tech. For my pick, I'm going to go Georgia Tech, Syracuse, Carry Dome. Syracuse can just be so feisty at home regardless of their record. It seems like they gave Clemson fits up there when Clemson was at the height of their powers. Georgia Tech moves to 3-0.
Woo!
Your final score, Georgia Tech 16, Syracuse 12.
How about new?
But I qualify. They can be feisty at home. Did you see Syracuse's quarterback yelling on the sidelines? Dude, they're blanking sorry. They are sorry.
Jeez, man. That was hilarious.
Ghastly.
No, man, and look, there's always going to be good and bad. Like I said, that was rough. That was rough. That's why it's called a man up, Mike.
I love how I'm like, the only team I trust in college football.
I'm like, they're going to have to prove it. You're going to have to prove it that you can beat the Panthers defense.
I love it. My first man up Monday. It's hilarious. It's good to be held accountable, and it's also good to have the good and the bad.
You know, this is therapy, guys. Let's use this as therapy. We are in therapy right now for our Falcons.
Well, we're going to come back and get into that a little bit more. And the specter of starting off 0-3 now seems alarmingly real. We'll get into that coming up on the Morning Shift, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.